I am delighted to say that my guest on this afternoon's slightly belated tea break is local author Kerry Fisher. Kerry, good afternoon and welcome to Susie Radio.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
It's absolutely lovely to have you here. Now, how local is local?
Local is fairly local. I live right on the top of Reigate Hill, where I can often be seen chasing after my naughty dog.
You're, of course, right next to where our transmitter is based, up there on the top of the hill. Now, Kerry, seriously, we're here to talk about your role as an author. Tell me, do you have a day job, or is it full-time writing for you?
I used to be a journalist, but I did give that up to write fiction full-time now.
Now, the new volume is called The Schoolgate Survival Guide. Can you tell us a little bit about it, and especially how the idea originated to do that?
Well, the idea came to me I lived in Italy for 5 years, and I realised that the snobbery over there was really related to geographical location. The northern Italians found themselves slightly superior to the southern Italians, and also job title. There was a lot of lawyer this and engineer this. But when I came back to Britain, I realised that there's snobbery, little bits of snobbery that you don't even really notice, running through the whole nation, and it fascinated me, and that's how I got the idea about writing a book about Schoolgate snobbery.
And what's it evolved into in British terms? How does the story go?
Well, really, I suppose I got interested in how language is a real... people do put you in a social hierarchy according to your accent, how you speak, even which words you use. I mean, I worked for an editor once who had a horror of the word toilet. She thought it was unbearably common, darling, and insisted on lavatory, which to me just conjures up dank school toilets.
You're a bit of a closet linguist, aren't you, talking about toilets?
I do. I am very interested in languages. In fact, I did a degree in languages. So I do listen to the way people speak, but not in a snobby way. I'm just very interested in how they use language.
Does the new novel have a central message about survival at the school gate?
I suppose it's really just be who you are and you will find your niche. I mean, actually, I've probably been a little bit unkind in the book because my own experience at the school gates has been incredibly positive. I've made some great friends. But you do see certain character traits, you know, the parents who have to get the sack race rerun because their child sneezed just as the starter gun went off, all that sort of thing. And I suppose I've just exaggerated those traits in the book.
Do you think the novel spells out that message, or is it something for the reader to puzzle out for themselves?
I think there are lots of, I mean, certainly parents who've been at the school gates will recognise certain types of characters. I don't think it really spells out the message. I just think there are certain situations like school fairs and school assemblies that they'll identify with and probably recognise a few of the happenings.
Okay, now, given that we live in an age of incredibly rapid change in society and social attitudes, do you think your survival guide will turn out to be a novel of its own time, or do you think there's some universal element to it?
I think there's a universal element to it. I mean, a lot of it's about parenting, and really, I mean, the central character is trying desperately to do the best for her children, and that's timeless, really. That's just not that's not just a contemporary thing. That's through the ages.
Okay, let's cut to the practical chase now. What sort of planning do you do personally when you're writing a novel, and what about the self-editing process once the writing's underway?
Well, my planning is not great, it has to be said. I tend to start off, I know how the novel starts and how it finishes. I know perhaps 15 things that happen in between, but not necessarily in which order. But I really get momentum going when I work out who my characters are and how they react in situations. And once I've got a grip on that, then it tends to come very easily.
And what about the self-editing part? I mean, what's your personal writing process like? I mean, some have a garden shed. What's yours?
Well, because my dog's very naughty, and when she sees me sitting down, she starts barking because she thinks I've got time to play. I tend to go and write in a cafe over in Hooley. So I write there for 3 hours every morning. And I force myself to write 1,000 words a day, whatever the weather. Whether I feel like it or not, those 1,000 words go down. Because if you don't have anything down, there's nothing to edit. Actually, I get the first draft down and I don't worry too much. It's mainly about getting the story down. And then I will go back and be very critical. You know, is there enough conflict in this chapter? Because unfortunately, people don't generally like to read about happy people because it's not very interesting. They always want to know how people resolve conflict. So I will go back and look at it very forensically. Is there enough conflict? Does it move quickly enough? And right down to the finer detail of have I used the word, you know, shenanigans 5 times on the same page.
So let's talk about influences. What about who are your favourite authors?
I very much like Catherine Stockett, who wrote The Help, which was made into a film, partly because she had loads of rejection, as did I. And I saw her speak at Guildford Library and she said, I had 67 rejections over 5 years, but I'm feeling slightly better now because Spielberg has just bought the film rights. And I thought, OK, for every novel I write, I'm going to allow myself 67 rejections before I give up.
Anybody, we verged on talking about your abilities as a linguist. Anybody from other languages, other cultures?
Well, when I was at university, I did read an awful lot of Italian and French literature. I did like Anoui. He wrote Antigone, which was a great play.
It's one of my favourite plays.
Yeah, I absolutely love it. But I have to say, as always, education tended to be wasted on the youth, and I wish that I could go back now and do it all again and pay a lot greater attention than I did then.
With Antigone, it's all about whether you sympathise with the girl or with her uncle, isn't it?
Indeed.
Which made it such a wonderful play for the Resistance, which is when it was first performed in Vichy, France. Okay, let's come back to current society. What sources do you draw on? I mean, obviously personal observation, but what other sources influence you? Is it the press? Is it the broadcast media?
I read an awful lot of fiction, actually, as you would probably expect. And I do tend to see solutions to my own writing when I'm reading other readers, not necessarily copying what they're doing, but I can see that they've used something in a clever way. So if I'm struggling with making a character credible or their actions credible, then I will get sort of inspiration and think, oh, that was a really clever way of doing that. I'm going to see if I can borrow that and make my writing work in that way.
And would you say that the ever so slightly JK method of sitting in the cafe writing leads to a little bit of social observation while you're doing it?
Well, I mean, it's a terrible cliche, actually, and I do feel embarrassed to say that I do go and sit in a cafe. But I mean, if I want to, if I'm thinking, right, I need to write about a 35-year-old man working on a laptop, I can just look around and there'll be the suitable person. And you know, I just hope they don't realise that I'm staring at them. So I try and be quite surreptitious about it.
Authors do need to be observers, to be people watchers. Yeah,
absolutely.
What have you learnt about the whole business of authorship from becoming a published author?
I think the most... Well, I've learnt two really important things. One is that people are incredibly generous-spirited, and as soon as you start to get a little bit of momentum behind you, people do really love to help, which is great. But probably the most important thing, I mean, it took me 5 years to get traditionally published, is... If you really want to be published, I mean, you probably have slightly more chance of being killed by the office photocopier. I mean, it is really a tough way. You have to persevere. You have to want it and feel that giving up is just slightly worse than carrying on.
Excellent. And in terms of excellence, I'm sure had we time, there'd be loads and loads of advice that you could impart to people perhaps seeking to follow the path that you've now followed successfully. Can I ask you for your one best bit of advice for an aspiring writer?
I'm going to have to give two, which is one, write an extremely good book. And set yourself words to do every day. Even if it's only 100 words, give yourself words. And then once you've written your extremely good book, network like mad. Go to every publishing event, every workshop, anywhere where there are agents, anywhere where there are editors.
Kerry, tell us again about the latest novel and how Susie listeners can find a copy.
Right, it's called The Schoolgate Survival Guide. It's currently available as an ebook on Kindle, and it will be out in paperback in September.
Is there a website for the book or a website of your own? That
I have my own website, which is kerryfisherauthor.com.
Jolly good. Now, I understand that your daughter believes your music choices for this afternoon all to have been incredibly square, as we used to say
evil.
In the 60s. But tell us about the one that you've chosen from Van Morrison.
I really like Brown Eyed Girl. It makes me feel young and it makes me want to dance.
Kerry Fisher, it's been an absolute pleasure to speak with you on the Afternoon Stroll Tea Break this Thursday, and we wish you every success with the Schoolgate Survival Guide.
Thank you for having me.